Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, and you know, before we jump in, you can find these sermons on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Just head over to the church's website, faithwayfbc.com, for more information.
Definitely go check those out.
So I want you to imagine something for a second. Imagine you are holding the absolute undeniable cure to a fatal disease.
Okay, high stakes right off the bat.
Right. I mean, you have the remedy sitting right there in your hands. Would you keep it to yourself just because you were, I don't know, afraid of an awkward conversation?
Oh, wow.
Or like because you didn't want to seem too pushy? Or would you do whatever it took to share it?
You'd share it. You have to.
Exactly. So today, based entirely on the teachings of Pastor Tim Travis, we are unpacking what is arguably the core duty of the Christian faith, which is soul winning.
Yeah, and it completely changes the stakes when you frame it as a literal matter of life and death.
You know? It really does.
And that is exactly how Pastor Tim Travis sets the stage for this entire discussion.
Yeah.
He points out that the gospel, which literally translates to glad tidings, specifically the good news of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ,
right,
it's not some kind of luxury add-on for the spiritually elite. It is an absolute necessity.
Like it's not a club perk.
Exactly. And sharing it isn't, you know, an elective class you can just opt out of. It is a direct command for every single believer.
Yeah, because if we're going to understand how to actually share the gospel, we first have to grapple with why it's required in the first place.
Absolutely.
You look at the Great Commission in Matthew 28, and Jesus doesn't offer a casual suggestion. He issues a direct mandate.
A mandate based on his authority.
Right. He establishes that he has all power in heaven and earth. And based entirely on that, he tells his followers to go and teach all nations.
And to understand why that mandate is so urgent, Pastor Tim Travis draws this really sharp distinction between what society tries to do and what the gospel actually does.
Oh, I loved this part.
Yeah, he points out that our modern culture is completely obsessed with reformation. Like, we try to reform people by cleaning up the outside.
Right, like the prison system.
The prison system, juvenile detention centers, all of that. We are essentially trying to manage and constrain human behavior.
Just putting guardrails on it.
Exactly. But behavioral management cannot fix spiritual death. The gospel doesn't offer reformation. It offers regeneration.
Regeneration. Yeah. That is a massive difference because reformation is just, I don't know, it's just painting over rot.
Yeah.
But regeneration is a complete metamorphosis from the inside out. It's the idea that a heart problem requires a completely new heart, not just better rules.
Precisely. You cannot fix a spiritual corpse by putting it in a nicer suit.
Right.
It needs actual life.
Okay, so theoretically that makes total sense. And in the Old Testament, in Ezekiel chapter 3, you have this vivid concept of the watchman on the wall.
Oh, the watchman, yeah.
The idea is that if you are the watchman standing on the city wall and you see a literal army with swords marching over the hill, you blow the horn.
You have to.
Right. If you don't blow the horn, their blood is on your hands.
Yeah.
And that is easy to understand in a medieval worker context.
Sure.
But like, let's look at the real world for a second.
Okay.
Turning to Bob in accounting while pouring coffee and asking about his eternal soul.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Culturally, nobody wants to hear about hell. It feels invasive. People are terrified of being that weird religious coworker.
It is incredibly awkward. And the sermon doesn't shy away from that reality at all.
No, it hits it head on.
Yeah, Pastor Tim Travis acknowledges that we live in a society that is not just spiritually lazy, but incredibly calloused. People are just numb.
Totally.
He brings up the truly staggering point from Scripture, actually. Jesus said that if the people of Sodom, who were notoriously wicked and destroyed for
it, an ultimate cautionary tale.
If they had heard the preaching that the people in his day were hearing, they would have repented. They would have turned around.
That really puts things in perspective.
It does.
Sodom would have repented, but our modern culture, with all its access to information and endless content, is just completely unfazed.
Unfazed. We have people with infinitely more access to the truth than Sodom ever had, and their hearts are stone.
So the natural question is, how do you possibly push past that overwhelming awkwardness at the water cooler?
Well, Pastor Tim Travis argues that your motivation has to be anchored in two things.
Okay.
A strict obedience to God's chosen method and a deep, genuine love for the lost. You have to reach a point where you realize that your temporary feelings of awkwardness are completely irrelevant compared to the facts of eternity.
Wow. Yeah.
If you truly believe the watchman warning is real, that the army is actually coming,
then you have to blow the horn.
Exactly. Your love for that coworker has to override your desire to feel comfortable in the break room.
Okay, so if our love for someone has to override our fear of looking foolish, what does that actually look like in practice?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because the mandate is clear, but the execution of it is where most people just freeze up.
Right.
We have to look at how this is actually done. And the sermon points us straight to Jesus, calling him the master soul winner.
And what's fascinating is looking at the actual mechanism of how Jesus operated.
Yeah.
Pastor Tim Travis points to Matthew chapter 9, verse 36 in the KJV. Jesus looks out at the multitudes, and the scripture says he saw them scattered like sheep with no shepherd.
Just totally lost.
And Jesus was moved with compassion. Now, we use the word compassion all the time to mean, like, basic pity.
Yeah, feeling bad for someone.
But Pastor Tim Travis breaks down the actual etymology of the word, which is so much heavier.
The prefix com, meaning with,
yeah,
and passion.
Exactly. To suffer with. He defines it as taking your hurt in my heart.
I love that phrase.
It's not feeling sorry for someone from a safe, comfortable distance. It is internalizing their lost, desperate condition as if it were your own.
Which brings to mind that incredible story Pastor Tim Travis shared about the Romanian well.
Oh my goodness, this story.
Just visualizing this makes my stomach drop. So there was a tiny 3-year-old baby who had fallen 50 feet down into a narrow well pipe.
50 feet, it's terrifying.
The baby is stuck upside down in the dark, screaming. The adult rescuers arrive, but they are physically too large to fit down the pipe.
Right, they can't get to it.
They have no way to reach this child. So they find a 14-year-old boy in the village.
A teenager.
Yeah, a teenager. They tie a rope around his waist and his ankles, and they lower this boy 50 feet down into pitch darkness.
The pure physical terror of that is hard to even comprehend.
It's horrifying. You are suspended by your ankles, squeezed into a pipe, dropping into the earth.
Wow.
But he goes all the way down, manages to grab the trapped baby by the ankles, and the adults pull them both back up to the surface.
Unbelievable.
And the headline in the news the next day was, "Went down a boy, came up a man."
That's so powerful.
Pastor Tim Travis connects the sheer gravity of that rescue directly to the lost. People without Christ are like that baby.
Yeah.
They are stuck in a dark well. They have absolutely no remedy, and they cannot save themselves. God is looking for people who will look down that dark pipe and say, "I will go down and get them."
And taking someone's hurt into your heart, having that true biblical compassion, means you have to be willing to step into the dark for them.
Yeah.
You have to enter their mess. But he is very quick to point out that stepping into someone else's mess doesn't mean it's going to be safe.
Or neat. Or polite.
Definitely not.
Having compassion doesn't mean you won't get bitten in the process.
Oh, the bulldog story.
Yes. There's this hilarious, though painfully real, story in the sermon about a guy out trying to share the gospel.
I was laughing so hard at this.
He walks up to a yard, and there's a little bulldog standing there with a kid. The guy wants to go in, but he's cautious, so he asks the kid, "Does your dog bite?"
Reasonable question.
Right. And the kid smiles and says, "Oh, no, he don't bite. He's a good dog."
It is the classic set up for disaster.
Totally. So the guy feels safe. He opens the gate, steps 1 foot inside the yard, and this bulldog instantly lunges, latches onto his ankle, tears up his pants, and draws blood.
Just absolute chaos.
The guy is scrambling, manages to kick the dog off, looks at the kid in absolute shock, and yells, "You said your dog doesn't bite."
And what does the kid say?
The kid just shrugs and says, "That's not my dog."
Just a tiny, crucial detail missing from the communication there.
Right. But the underlying point Pastor Tim Travis is making is profound. Engaging with a calloused culture is perilous.
It really is.
You might get metaphorically or sometimes literally bitten. People will snap at you. They will get defensive. But compassion is what drives you past the dogs and into the yard anyway. You go in knowing it might hurt.
So if you are willing to get bitten, if you make it past the gate, how do you actually engage?
That's the thing.
Because a lot of people think evangelism means memorizing a strict, rigid script and reciting it at people until they submit.
Like a sales pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But Jesus didn't do that. Jesus had this deep compassion, but he customized his approach to perfectly match the specific spiritual need of the person standing in front of him.
You see this so clearly when you put his different encounter side by side. I mean, look at Nicodemus in John chapter 3 versus the woman at the well in John chapter 4.
Complete opposites.
It is a completely different Jesus interacting with them.
Let's look at the psychology of Nicodemus first.
Okay.
He is a wealthy, highly educated Pharisee, a ruler of the Jews. He comes to Jesus by night because he is terrified of losing his social standing.
Right, he's got a reputation to protect.
Exactly. He wants the truth, but he wants to debate it safely in the dark.
Oh.
Jesus doesn't entertain the theological games.
No, he cuts right through it.
Nicodemus has all the outward reformation a person could possibly have, so Jesus cuts straight to the core issue. He is patient, but incredibly blunt, telling him, "Ye must be born again."
Using the KJV phrasing there, yeah.
He tells this religious expert that his religion is useless without total internal regeneration. And that precise, direct approach worked. Nicodemus is the one who eventually stepped out of the shadows, risked everything, and publicly claimed Jesus' crucified body.
But then you pivot to John chapter 4 with the woman at the well, and the script flips entirely.
It really does.
She is the total opposite of Nicodemus. She is a marginalized outcast. She is fetching water at high noon in the blistering heat, specifically to avoid the other women in town who judge her.
She's swimming in shame.
And notice how Jesus approaches her. He doesn't start with a blunt theological hammer like he did with Nicodemus.
No, he doesn't.
He actually asks her for a favor. He asks for a drink of water.
Which totally disarms her.
Exactly. But she's still defensive. She uses sarcasm. She immediately brings up the intense racial tension between Jews and Samaritans trying to build a wall.
Trying to push him away.
But Jesus isn't offended by her sharp edges or her sarcasm. He bypasses the cultural barriers by using the very physical thing she is focused on, the well water, to explain a spiritual concept.
The living water.
Yes, he offers her living water. He meets her shame with overwhelming curiosity and grace. And the result, she becomes a well herself.
That's amazing.
This woman who was hiding from her city leaves her water pot behind and runs back to the very people she was avoiding to tell them about him.
And then you have this extreme third example, the maniac of Gadara in Mark chapter 5.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Talk about someone society has thrown away.
You have a naked, demon-possessed man living in a graveyard, cutting himself with stones. The townspeople had tried to bind him with chains, but he was breaking them.
Just a horrific situation.
And it is dark, it is chaotic, and it is violent. Complete societal abandonment. But Jesus isn't intimidated by the supernatural darkness or the mess.
No.
He literally sails across the sea, specifically for this one man. He casts out the demons and completely restores the man's mind. But here's the fascinating twist in the method.
What's that?
When the restored man begs to get in the boat and leave that town behind, to just follow Jesus away from all his past trauma, Jesus says no.
Wow. Really?
Jesus tells him to go back to his friends and tell them what the Lord had done. He sends him right back into his old context as a living, undeniable witness to the people who knew exactly how broken he used to be.
It is such a tailored, individualized approach. The sermon used this brilliant analogy to explain this, talking about an organization called Homes for Troops. Have you seen what they do?
I have. It's incredible. They build houses for severely injured military veterans.
Right. But the key is they don't just build a standard cookie-cutter subdivision house. They study the veteran.
Oh, I see.
If a soldier is in a wheelchair, they lower all the kitchen cabinets and widen the hallways. If a veteran is a double amputee, they install motion sensors on the doors and the refrigerators so they don't have to pull anything.
That's brilliant.
They custom fit the architecture to the exact physical injury of the soldier. And Pastor Tim Travis says that is exactly what Jesus does with the gospel.
I love that.
He doesn't hand out a generic tract. He custom fits the remedy to the exact spiritual injury of the person. He knows exactly where it hurts, and he builds the bridge right there.
That is a profoundly beautiful way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to diagnose the specific spiritual need and offer the specific grace of Christ.
Yeah.
But as beautiful as that is, this brings us to a massive practical hurdle for the listener.
Right.
We see what Jesus did, but we aren't Jesus.
Yeah. That is the elephant in the room. What about the guy who sweats through his shirt just talking to a cashier at the grocery store?
Exactly.
If someone is listening right now thinking, I'm an extreme introvert, I don't know ancient Greek, I don't know apologetics, I cannot be a spiritual salesman, mm-hmm. What does this mandate mean for them?
This is where Pastor Tim Travis relieves so much unnecessary pressure.
Oh, good.
The modern church has almost created this salesman stereotype of evangelism, where you have to be a slick, charismatic speaker who can debate atheists into submission.
Which is terrifying for most people.
Absolutely. But he reminds us of the actual legal and biblical definition of a witness. A witness in a court of law is not the lawyer.
Oh, that's a good point.
The witness's only job is to sit on the stand and tell the jury exactly what they have personally seen and experienced. That's it.
You don't have to argue the case. You just report what happened to you.
Precisely. And he points to the blind man Jesus healed in John chapter 9. This guy's being interrogated by the most educated religious leaders of his day.
They're throwing everything at him.
They are trying to trip him up with deep, complex theological traps about who Jesus is and where he came from. And this formerly blind man refuses to play their game.
He just sticks to what he knows.
He just says, whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. Uh-huh. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see.
That is bulletproof.
It really is.
I don't know your theology. I don't know the historical background. But I know I used to bump into walls, and today I can see. You can't argue with a transformed life.
You really can't. And Pastor Tim Travis says it is perfectly acceptable, even encouraged, to just say, I don't know, when someone asks you a hard intellectual question.
That takes so much pressure off.
You don't have to fake it. You can just say, that is a really great question. I have no idea. Let's go to church and find out together.
Yeah.
As for the introverts, or people who feel paralyzed by fear, the sermon advises praying for what he calls low-lying fruit.
I really like that concept. It takes the pressure off having to climb to the top of the tree on day one.
Exactly. Look for the opportunities that God places right at your eye level.
Just within reach.
Right. If you absolutely cannot bring yourself to speak the words out loud, utilize whatever means you do have. Can you send a text message? Can you write a heartfelt note?
Yeah.
Can you leave a tract with a generous tip? God is just asking us to be faithful with the tools currently in our hands.
And Pastor Tim Travis shared two amazing stories about how God orchestrates these seemingly small acts of obedience.
Oh, these stories gave me chills.
The first one was about an African tribal chief.
Yes. This chief was completely isolated from Christianity, but he is looking up at the night sky, feeling the immense weight of his leadership and his own spiritual emptiness.
Wow.
And he just cries out to the Creator for truth. He essentially says, if you are up there, and if you are real, reveal yourself to me.
And the very next day, a missionary walks into his remote village preaching the name of Jesus.
The timing is just incredible.
The chief broke down in tears because he instantly knew God had heard him. It just proves that people out in the world are actively looking for the truth, even if they wear a mask of total indifference.
Yeah.
God is already working on the other side of the equation. He just needs someone to show up.
And the second story highlights what it looks like to just use the tools you have.
Right. The sheep's wool.
Yes. It's about an elderly African woman who couldn't read a single word. She had no theological training, but one day she came up to a missionary holding a simple string made of sheep's wool.
Okay.
Tied into that string were 68 knots. Every single knot represented a soul she had personally witnessed to.
That is just staggering. A piece of sheep's wool with 68 knots. She couldn't read a Bible verse, but she just told people what she had seen and heard.
Just a witness.
But, you know, as encouraging as all this is, the sermon doesn't just end with motivation. Pastor Tim Travis issues a very stark, very serious warning about the messenger themselves.
He does, and it's a vital pivot in the message. Because we can talk about methods and compassion all day, but he brings up the Apostle Paul's instruction in 2 Timothy chapter 2 about the necessity of being a vessel of honor.
Let's talk about the dirty coffee cup analogy, because this is where the psychology of hypocrisy really hits home.
Oh, this was gross, but so effective.
Right. Pastor Tim Travis said, imagine you invite a guest over to your house and you offer them something to drink. But instead of grabbing a clean glass from the cupboard, you hand them a coffee cup that you have already used 56 times in a row without ever washing it.
Ugh, it's stained, it's crusty, it smells.
It is repulsive. Now, think about the guest reaction. The guest doesn't care if you are pouring the purest, most expensive, crystal clear spring water in the world into that cup.
No.
The vessel itself makes them want absolutely nothing to do with what's inside. And he applies this directly to the Christian life.
It's a perfect analogy.
If a Christian has a dirty, unclean testimony, if they are living in a way that blatantly contradicts the gospel they claim to preach, they will completely nullify their witness to the world.
It's a sobering reality check. You might spend 5 years building a relationship with a coworker, earning their trust, getting ready to share the gospel.
Yeah.
But a filthy habit, a constant gossiping attitude, a hot temper, or a lack of basic integrity acts exactly like that dirty coffee cup.
Wow.
The world isn't necessarily rejecting the living water. They're looking at the hypocritical vessel holding it and saying, if that is what your faith produces, if that's how you act, I want absolutely nothing to do with it.
Don't hit it hard.
God desperately wants to use us as conduits for his grace, But he demands that we purge ourselves of these things so we can actually be vessels of honor, fit for the master's use.
It really forces you to take a hard look in the mirror before you ever point a finger at the culture.
Absolutely.
So if we pull all of this together and look at the massive picture Pastor Tim Travis has painted for us today, soul winning is not a suggestion. It is a clear, undeniable mandate from Christ himself.
Yes.
But it is a mandate that has to be carried out using the master's model of customized compassion. Jesus didn't stand on a wall and scream at people from a safe distance. He got down in the dirt with them, figured out exactly where their specific spiritual injury was, and offered a custom-fitted cure.
And our role in that massive operation is surprisingly simple, even if it's intimidating.
Yeah.
We don't have to be the savior. We don't have to argue anyone into the kingdom. We just have to ensure we are a clean vessel. We simply take the stand, share exactly what we have personally seen and heard, point them to the cure, and trust God entirely with the results.
It takes so much pressure off our shoulders, but it puts the responsibility right back on our daily walk.
It sure does.
Which brings me back to the thought we started with at the very beginning. We hold the cure. We are commanded to share it. But I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you go about your day.
Okay.
If a witness is simply someone who shares what they have seen and experienced, and your daily life is preaching a loud, continuous message every single day, what exactly is the message your life is currently broadcasting to the people around you, even when you aren't saying a single word?